With the weather warming up and more of us spending our leisure time outdoors, there are a few insect-borne diseases that we should be prepared for. Well, joining us this morning as part of our regular series, Public Health Today, to help us understand what the dangers are and what we need to do to protect ourselves and our families are Dr. Donna Bakke, Associate Professor and Chair of Public Health and Preventive Medicine at Upstate Medical University, and Dr. Cynthia Morrow, the Commissioner of Health for Onondaga County. Welcome to you both. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
So what are the insect-borne diseases that can afflict us, particularly here in central New York? I know Lyme is something that is really, I think, on everybody's mind these days. It seems to me that we are in a hot spot. Is that true, Dr. Morrow?
Well, it's all relative. If you look at where we were 6 years ago, we are definitely at increased risk of Lyme disease. And what everyone needs to understand is that Onondaga County now has endemic Lyme, meaning that we should assume that we can get Lyme disease from ticks, deer ticks, in Onondaga County. But relative to what is going on in Dutchess County or in some of our eastern counties, we're still much better off than they are.
We are. Oh, that's interesting, because it was always my impression lately that people always talk about Green Lakes or places right here in Onondaga County that are really rampant with Lyme. So that's interesting.
Yes, again, it's relative to historic trends, and we are, the eastern part is certainly more of a concern than it was a few years ago, but the eastern part of New York is still a greater risk.
So tell us about it. What exactly, you know, how is it disseminated? What does it do to us, Lyme disease?
Well, it's an infection, and basically some of the symptoms are people can get a distinct type of rash. They can get swollen joints. Sometimes they can have some fever with it. It's very similar with the joint swelling to some other things, but certainly if you have any of those symptoms and you have been in a place where there might have been deer ticks, so you've been walking in the woods, walking in high grass someplace, and think you may have been bitten by a tick, you certainly need to go to a physician and see.
Isn't there some kind of a distinctive rash, like a circular kind of pattern that somehow...
It looks like a bullseye type rash.
But that's not always there. Or is it always there?
It's not always there, but it is there in a predominant percentage of cases, and it really is considered diagnostic of Lyme disease. So certainly we hope that people prevent getting tick bites, but if they do have this lesion, it is critical that they see their physician as soon as possible to get on antibiotics.
I was under the impression initially that Lyme disease was very seasonal. And then I was told, again, perhaps misinformed, that these ticks can really winter over and live through the winter, that, for example, if you have animals, pets, that you need to protect them year-long because the ticks are out there. Has been that,
the
that
challenge, well, clearly Lyme is seasonal. I think that the question is it possible to get Lyme at other times of the year? Yes, it is. Ticks can overwinter, meaning that if there's a single warm day in the winter, they can come out.
Like this past winter.
Past winter, exactly. But the reality is that you're much more likely to see ticks in the spring through the summer and into the fall than you are in the winter. So we see more cases of Lyme disease as the summer progresses.
And the problem really is with the deer. I mean, not the problem. I mean, the deer have become exponentially more... There's more of them. And basically, that's something that has been difficult for people to control, I think, all throughout the Northeast.
Sure. I think that the important thing is that there are a lot of things that you can do to protect yourself. The actual vector for tick is the vector, but the white-footed mouse is really the primary instigator here. Well, then the deer get the ticks. It's a bit of a complicated ecology, but the important thing for Dr. Bakke and for me, I think, is for us to spread the message of how people can prevent Lyme disease. And the best way to prevent Lyme disease is to decrease your risk of ticks. So avoiding those areas in terms of where there's high grass and woods. If you are going into a tick-infested area, make sure you wear light, long pants so that you can see the ticks. And one thing that we really encourage is when you do get home, take off those clothes, put them in the laundry right away, and take a shower so that if there are any ticks that are not yet embedded, they can be washed off, and do a tick check. If you remove a tick within 36 hours, 24 to 36 hours, you will prevent Lyme disease entirely. So doing a tick check and removing that tick is the most important thing.
I think that's excellent advice.
And I also think think checking your head and your, you know, in on your scalp, and that's something that people don't always think about, and you have to have somebody else obviously do that, but that is a place that sometimes ticks will go, and you may not know it because you've looked at the rest of your body and say, I'm fine, but you weren't wearing a hat, or you didn't necessarily, or you brushed against a branch when you were walking and didn't realize it.
And sometimes I would think ticks could lodge in more private parts and places that
they like warm crevices.
Right.
And so you need to look in the skin folds and around the hairlines. The other thing, of course, is that there are tick repellents. And if you are an outdoor, we certainly encourage people to go outdoors and enjoy our beautiful parks. If you're an outdoors person, consider using tick repellent. That's another way of decreasing your risk of tick bites.
There's no vaccine for humans at this point against Lyme disease.
No, there is. There used to be, but it was removed from the market years ago.
So at this point, is there any talk of resurgence of that opportunity?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah. And why was it removed? Was there something? It was ineffective, or
it needed to be given every year, and I think that there just wasn't the demand that was needed to maintain the supply.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, I'm going to ask you to hold on to those ideas and thoughts because we're going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Lyme, but then there are some other diseases I think we want to pay attention to as well. So stay with us. We'll be right back. With Dr. Donna Bakke and Dr. Cynthia Morrow, and we have been talking about Lyme disease. And before the break, we were talking about principally that Lyme is caused by a tick, and it's the deer tick, is that correct?
Correct.
But does the deer tick also present other hazards for us?
Yes, there are other diseases that ticks can carry. So other diseases that we would be worried about are babesiosis, something called ehrlichiosis, Rocky Mountain spotted fever. There are several other tick-borne diseases, and I think while Lyme disease is the most common one in central New York, it is possible to get some of these other tick-borne diseases. So we really want to impress upon people how important it is to take those steps to reduce the risk of getting bitten. If you reduce the risk of getting bitten, or if you are bitten, if you remove that tick right away, you're going to eliminate the risk of the diseases associated with ticks.
For people who have pets, and I'm one of them, I was alarmed upon getting a young puppy and finding within the first few weeks of life where you couldn't yet put on these pesticides that this puppy had already contracted a tick in my backyard. So I guess since that time, he's been vaccinated and he's getting, pet control, the tick control on him on a monthly basis. But for people who are pet owners, is there any special thing they should be aware of? Because it seems to me the pet can also be a vector that could bring the ticks into your home.
I think that the most important thing is what you've already mentioned, and that's taking care of your pets the same way you would reduce the risk in your children. You protect your children. Protect your pets. They are very vulnerable to tick-borne diseases as well.
So whether it's the vaccine or the chronic use or the regular use of the pesticide, it's a really important piece
Absolutely,
of this whole it is. Picture. Well, let's talk a little bit about the other, insect-borne diseases. And I think we were mentioning them before, one being triple E. What does that actually stand for and what does it mean?
Triple E stands for Eastern Equine Encephalitis, which is a virus. The good thing, if there's any good thing, is that it's extremely rare. The terrible, terrifying thing about Triple E is that it has a very high mortality rate. And so
it's deadly, basically.
It is deadly. It is a deadly disease, and it is incredibly important for people to do whatever they can do to reduce the risk, because while it's rare, we don't want anyone to get Triple E.
But there have been cases in central New York or in New York State?
Yes. We've had cases in Onondaga County in central New York. Unfortunately, we have an ecology that is set up for Triple E, and it's a we live in a beautiful, beautiful place, but the Cicero Swamp and the surrounding areas are at particular risk for Eastern Equine Encephalitis.
And because it's borne by a mosquito, is that the critical factor here?
Yes.
Unlike Lyme, which is borne by tick, this is mosquito-borne.
Right.
And so what, if anything, can be done to both from on a regional level or on a large scale level deal with this issue of the mosquitoes first, and then we'll talk specifically about what people can do?
There has to be a multifaceted approach. So certainly we do surveillance. We do mosquito surveillance to see what the mosquitoes are in our area, what types of diseases they're carrying. But I think that the important thing, and then when necessary, when there are many indicators, we will spray if necessary. But before that, there's personal protection. There's environmental things that people can do in their surrounding areas. And we also start our surveillance very early. So we do something called larvaciding, which is to decrease the risk of adult populations of of larval populations of mosquitoes. So there's a multifaceted approach, starting from knowing where our mosquitoes are, and we larvicide catch basins. That's more to reduce the risk of West Nile virus.
Again, I wanted to talk about that as well. Is that more prevalent? West Nile is more prevalent?
It's very variable. Certainly West Nile is more prevalent across the entire country, but in our ecology, Tripoli is a greater threat.
It is. So let's get back. So basically what happens with Tripoli, you get bitten by a mosquito that's carrying the virus and then you are infected. I remember reading in the paper at one point that there were birds that were being affected by Tripoli. Is that the case or no?
We consider the bird population to be more vulnerable with West Nile. With Tripoli, it's equine encephalitis.
Horse.
So we really worry about the horse population. And there is a vaccine for horses. We strongly encourage horse owners to get their horses vaccinated.
But then after the virus is in the horse, another mosquito will bite the horse? I mean, I'm trying to understand how that works. And how does the human...
Right. Well, there is a vicious cycle, and it's a very complicated ecologic cycle. I think that the important thing is that we really want people, we, the health departments in the region, work together with the state health department, with the Department of Environmental Conservation, to try to look at the overall mosquito population. But the important thing is that people can protect themselves.
Tell us some ways specifically. You were talking, for example, environmental ways. So I know I've read somewhere that if you have standing water on your property, that you should try to eliminate that.
Sure. So eliminate standing water. Now, unfortunately, mosquitoes don't know boundaries, and they'll cross from my yard into your yard.
Exactly.
So that's definitely something to reduce the overall mosquito population. We encourage people to consider larvaciding if they have standing water, like ponds, for example.
So
larvaciding, you can apply...
like an insecticide or something?
Basically an insecticide to decrease the
growth
population of baby
eggs.
Mosquitoes, basically eggs. But the other thing is to protect yourself is to make sure that your screens are working. You don't have holes in your screen so that mosquitoes aren't getting into your home. And then in terms of protecting yourself, when you do go outside, avoid the prime mosquito feeding hours, dawn and dusk. Wear long sleeves if you have to go out when there are a lot of mosquitoes active. And certainly we strongly support the use of mosquito repellents, especially later in the season. At this time of the season, they're a nuisance, but they're not typically carrying disease yet. We don't tend to see viral activity in mosquitoes until late July, August. But we'll be doing our surveillance, and we will certainly let people know when we start seeing activity.
So getting to the idea of repellents, are there some repellents that are better than others, and are there some that carry some dangers?
Well, DEET is probably the one that would be most protective.
And that's DEET, correct?
But mm-hmm. there is a concern, particularly with children. You don't want to be giving them, very, very young children, anything because it can be absorbed into the skin. So there is a concern. You don't want, if you apply it, you need to, don't apply it. You can apply it liberally once, but don't keep putting it in.
Don't keep reapplying.
So that would be the one that would be the most effective. So products that contain that mm-hmm. would be the most effective. People have tried some non-DEET containing products, some herbal ones that...
Oil of lemon eucalyptus.
eucalyptus, which is more of a kind of a deterrent. You know, they don't like that so that mm-hmm. they won't bite you if you have that on. But clearly, I think if you're going to be outside using long sleeves, long pants, keeping your ankles covered. It's pretty
hard,
though.
Yes, I can imagine that, but it's pretty hard to keep your face completely covered. I mean, it seems to me your initial point of trying to stay indoors maybe during the most active times for mosquitoes seems to be pretty good advice as well.
And the other thing for children that we really want to make sure people understand, follow the directions on the label and do not apply directly to the face. You were just mentioning the face. You know, you can put it on your hands and then rub your face, but we do not want people applying DEET directly to their face, particularly with children. So just follow the labels and we should be good to go. But the important thing is, do whatever you can to avoid the risk of being bitten. And we are more concerned about mosquito bites towards the end of the season than we are in the beginning of the season. And we will let the public know when we start having viral activity.
Well, that's very reassuring. Tell me more about West Nile, though. What is that exactly? And how does it differ, for example?
Well, West Nile is another viral disease that's carried by mosquitoes. The main
is it as deadly?
It is not. The main difference is that you're more likely to get flu-like symptoms. Most people who are bitten by a mosquito carrying West Nile don't get any symptoms.
Oh,
those
really?
Who do get symptoms tend to get flu-like symptoms, and only rarely does it cause encephalitis. But certainly if it does cause encephalitis, which is inflammation of the brain, that can be life-threatening. So with all of these issues, with all of these tick-borne, insect-borne, mosquito-borne illnesses, we really want to spread the message that the best thing to do is to minimize your risk of getting bitten. And by doing that, you minimize the risk of getting the disease.
Right. But if you suspect that you have been bitten and that you have symptoms, what symptoms would you, you said you'd have flu-like symptoms. With Eastern equine, what kind of symptoms might you have in terms of alerting yourself?
The first symptoms are also going to be flu-like. The challenge, though, is that it's going to rapidly progress to neurologic symptoms where there's altered mental status. And that, of course, is a medical emergency that requires immediate medical attention.
I think that's really important.
I was
going to
say, for both West Nile and Eastern equine encephalitis, there is no drug that we can give because it's a virus. So if you get infected, you know, the disease has to run its course, and sometimes your body can mount a response and some people survive, but a lot of times, at least with Eastern equine, they don't. So the prevention is really the most important thing, is to avoid the places that you know are going, that you're likely, you know, avoid the time of day when you're most likely to get bitten by these mosquitoes, and to use protective clothing and use DEET containing insect repellent if you can, if you know you're going to have to be someplace.
Well, thank you so much really for this overview. I think it's really helpful and reassuring, first to know that the county's really on top of all of this and keeping us informed, but also that there are things we can do and should be doing on an active basis. So once again, thanks. My guests have been Dr. Donna Bakke, Associate Professor and Chair of Public Health and Preventive Medicine at Upstate Medical University, and Dr. Cynthia Morrow, Commissioner of Health for Onondaga County. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back with a personal story about Lyme, and more about where you can get support. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.